Excellent. We have recording. I can't find the transcriber button, but hopefully that's part of the recording. So once again, welcome everybody. While there are still some people arriving, let's start with the IP notes. As you know, anyone can participate in these calls. However, all substantive contributors to any of the CCG work items must be members of the CCG group with full IPR agreement signed. Please note that the meeting is recorded, and hopefully we have the robot transcribing the meeting, and we will be able to share the audio and the video recording after the call. If you would like to speak, please raise your hand or type Q plus in the chat to add yourself to the queue. We can move on to the next agenda item. If you have any new people in the call or somebody who would like to reintroduce themselves, please feel free to take the floor now and speak. Okay. If we do not have newcomers or people who would like to introduce themselves, then we can move on to announcements and reminders. Are there any events on your calendars or on your radar that you would like to invite the community to? Please feel free to... Oh, Danielle is trying to use the microphone. Please feel free. You should be allowed to unmute yourself.
Okay, I figured it out. Sorry about that.
Excellent.
Good morning, hello, everyone. I just wanted to say hello. Colin asked me to do a quick show and tell of something I'm working on, so I thought I'd say hello at the top of the call, and you'll hear from me soon.
That's excellent. And do we have Colin in the... Yes, we have Colin in the call as well. So welcome to our speakers for the main agenda point. Before we move there, if you have any announcements, like I said, you can either grab the floor or speak up, or you're welcome to use the chat to share dates and URLs of events or news articles. The community is here to receive them. Before moving to the main topic of today's call, an unusual housekeeping agenda point. As we announced in the invitation email late last week, we are launching a short survey with which we are trying to improve how our task portals are managed, transcribed, and we would like to pick your brains about topics that you would like to discuss or you would like to be informed about. So thank you for those of you who already submitted your responses to this very short survey. In a minute, I'm going to paste the link to the survey into the chat so you are able to click on it and have it as a placeholder for later. But now, without further ado, I would like to give over the floor to our two speakers to introduce themselves and their projects that are supporting LERs for learners and employers. Thank you very much, Colin and Danielle. The floor is yours.
Awesome. Thank you.
Hello, everybody. Share my screen. Is that coming through okay?
Yes.
Wonderful. Well, hello, everyone. Let's see, Eric just added himself to the queue. Hey, Eric, did you want to share something?
Yeah, sorry, that was a mistake, Colin. Sorry.
All good. Well, my name is Colin Reynolds. I work with Education Design Lab. I recognize some faces or names in the chat today, and see some other new ones. I've been attending these calls for a few years now. Usually, learning alongside everyone else and learning from all of you. So very excited to share some of the work that I've been up to with Education Design Lab, formerly worked with Learning Economy Foundation, and in the first 15 years of my career were spent in schools as a classroom teacher and administrator of all ages, mostly elementary and middle school, but now have been in this space for the last handful of years, and excited to share some of the projects we've been working on. So to put a little context around it, I wanted to give a brief overview of Education Design Lab and the work we do, and then we'll get into some of the projects, and then I'll hand it over to Danielle to talk about one of the tools that we've created to support some of our partners in this work. Now, if you have any questions, feel free to just throw them in the chat. There is a slide for Q&A, but we can just take them as we go as well. All right, so we are a national nonprofit based in the United States. The home base was Washington, D.C. prior to the pandemic, and then the lab became a remote company, a remote group that works with colleges, universities, other organizations, including employers, and increasingly more work with employers around designing, testing, and building new models and approaches to solving challenges for individuals that need them most. We usually talk about the new majority workforce, which are typically first-generation college students or non-degree college students, but we work alongside very closely with community colleges, increasingly more state education groups, state workforce boards, and other organizations to help really kind of build ecosystems of solutions. So a lot of the work is done designing micro pathways with post-secondary groups. Again, currently our work is mostly based in the U.S. We have been increasingly learning from many that are on the call here and a lot of the modeling of what has been going on in Europe with the Europass and a lot of the other projects, specifically in the way that the standards are being incorporated into solutions. So some of the work we're going to talk about explicitly states some of the technical standards that we are hoping our partners are checking for or requesting as they're looking at credentialing and using data to help support their learners and employers supporting their earners. So we'll talk a little bit about some of how we approach this work with higher education partners. We talk about a digital discoverability strategy that includes learning and employment records, other forms of verified credentials. We also do some work with employers under what's becoming more talked about in the States as skills first work or skills based hiring and advancements. Skills are really becoming a very common topic for policymakers, state boards, state education boards, and groups working to try to find ways to get people into jobs without having the 4-year degree requirement or 2-year degree requirement be the standard. So they talk a lot about that work as skills-based and skills-first. And then I'll share a little bit about a project that we are leading with the U.S. Chamber of Commerce Foundation called Experience U. We can chat a little bit about some of those projects and then want to hand it over to Danielle to talk about the tool that we are using most actively to support our higher education partners in navigating this whole world. So I threw on the LER slide. I think many here know what an LER is, but when we work with our partners, we end up finding ourselves in the place of educating them on just what an LER is exactly and what it isn't and how they can think about it inside of a bigger strategy. But the idea of an LER, learning and employment record, is increasingly common in the approach to our work, and our partners often come to us and ask for support in building an LER or, you know, what is and what isn't an LER. So we really talk about it as a collection of all digital records, and the Experience U project that I'll share a little bit more about is taking past experiences, employment, and learning and helping to credential them in a way that would allow individuals to bring their past experiences forward into this digital realm, because a lot of the work that happens is focused on current issuance of credentials and moving forward. Not many organizations think about how they can issue for past experiences to include those in, into a learning and employment record. So in the work that we do, I mentioned it, it being more about digital discoverability and a strategy. We keep the humans at the center of all the work that we do. So at Design Lab really focuses on human-centered and equity-centered design. We have a lot of tools and processes for centering the problem statements and solution statements with those individuals in mind. So we've done a ton of work across a variety of states in the U.S., but the common theme here is that the humans are the focus. So when we think about a skills-based ecosystem, we look at micro-credentials and credentials, digital badges, whatever you want to call them. They all have sort of different nuances to them, but micro-credentials sit at the core of the LER, which should be stored inside a digital wallet where an individual has some ownership and ability to port those credentials to places that are going to help them find value and opportunity in a skills-based ecosystem. But it's incredibly important in our work that we center that with the humans that are being impacted by it. So it involves a lot of design sessions with employers, with higher education partners, with learners, with earners, and a combination of all of them together. So with micro-credentials in mind, the lab created a set of durable skills micro-credentials that have competencies. These are the nine main competencies. There are sub-competencies associated with them. And this set of durable skills, we also developed a set of learning modules and assessments that help to basically credential existing experience for individuals. So the tool is called X-Credit. The X-Credit assessments, that's a whole separate presentation that this group may be interested in. But the X-Credit really helps our partners think about ways that they can validate these skills and competencies in the context of whatever industry they're working in. And so there's a lot of different applications for it. And the assessments that have been created are very rigorous assessments that are research-based. They're scenario based. So you can imagine an individual going through sort of a mock problem solution, dialogue with another human in a virtual setting. You could go as far as, you know, putting it into a VR set, to engage in that as well. But that, this is a way that we work with our partners to help talk about and sort of calibrate around what we mean when we say durable skills or soft skills. And how we can teach those skills explicitly and assess them and award credentials to represent those competencies. So this I know is probably a little overwhelming of a visual, but when we talk with our higher education partners or increasingly more with employers about what we mean when we say digital discoverability and skills visibility, what we're really trying to do is help identify skills that individuals are learning in specific contexts and how we can make those skills visible inside of the larger ecosystem for employers to find and for individuals to be able to see. I think that's been a real powerful part of the work that we do with partners is that individuals, when they go through these processes or they collect credentials, they get a better sense of the skills that they actually have, which helps them navigate their conversations and interview processes and application processes for new jobs. But when we work with partners, we start talking about the skills and we want to make sure that we have identified the skills that are happening and align those skills to the learning experiences that are going on, whether it's on campus or in a work-based learning environment, internships, apprenticeships, what have you, or a combination of all those things. So in order to make those skills visible, we need to use, well, in this case, credentials and verified credentials help to document those and attach evidence so that when they take them in their LER, in their wallet, to a marketplace, they're able to bring those to the surface. So this is an example of what one of those micro pathways might look like. So this was created with the Borough of Manhattan Community College. We do this work with, I think we're actively working with about 40 community colleges across the country. Again, mostly focused around STARS, which are those who are skilled through alternative routes. So many of these are non-degree programs, often non-credit programs as well, that are focused on industry certifications, high need or in need job positions inside of specific regions in states. So we work with the both ends of the spectrum. So the employers that would be hiring these individuals and the colleges and education institutions, which is increasingly moving into high school for some of the dual enrollment programs. As well, we run through design sessions to help identify the experiences that individuals need to have. You can see the 21st century or durable skills credentials are embedded in there as well. So the collection of all of these credentials then helps to build an LER that they can take into, in this case, the specific industry, but we do these for industries, all types of different industries. We also do the work with the employers to understand what skills are needed and connect those to the skills that are being taught explicitly in these learning programs. So this is a sample LER infrastructure graphic that Danielle actually put together. It helps to kind of create a better visual for the employers that we're working with and the education partners that we're working with. The idea of an LER is still, many people get it when it's all laid out, but coming in cold to some of these conversations, it's really helpful to see a graphic about how all these parts connect. And anyone here who's attended the IEEE LER recommended practices working group over the last 4 years, this is sort of inspired by that that model and the original kind of trust triangle that was put out in the early days of this work. But when we talk with our education partners or providers here, they're the ones who are actually creating and managing a collection of credentials and issuing them. And that education provider can be a college, it can be a training program. For us, we've created durable skills that are being issued or by other higher ed institutions or training partners. And we want to help them see that when they issue that credential, it should actually be then stored in a digital wallet, and an individual should be able to take those credentials and achievements to help build their profile and their resume to share with employers, whether that's directly with employers through an applicant tracking system or a human resource information system, or by diving into a talent marketplace, which is a growing concept, I think, across the employment landscape. When those employers receive that, right, so this, I think this group is very well versed with all of this, the employers then want to verify that that credential is what it was issued to be, and it has the evidence and data inside of it to be unpacked to verify that they have those skills, that they have the sort of the skills to do the job that they're being hired for. So this idea of a credential registry or trust registry, we don't really get too much into that with the education providers until we start building a strategy and implementing that strategy in action. But that can go a lot of different ways, as everyone here knows. So this then tries to help connect the job seeker's qualifications and what would appear in their current resume or application, an LER, with the job posting that the employers are doing. And this is where we increasingly are working with employers to make sure that the job postings they're creating use those skills, language, and skills terminology to identify what it is they're actually looking for and connect it to the skills that individuals have and have earned through their learning achievements. So I'll stop there. These are some resources that I think are helpful to at least keep track of some major LER initiatives and work happening in the States. And these, I can share this deck with everybody, and all these are linked to these initiatives or tools. But I'll just give a little pause and see if there's any questions or comments.
We have a question in chat from Sharon. With regards to the Borough of Manhattan, are they issuing the MT basic credentials as verifiable credentials?
Yes. So that's the big part of our work with them, is that we do bring to light the different types of credentials and standards that support them. And Danielle, the tool that she's going to share is a great comparison tool for our partners to see what issuers, like what form they're actually issuing those credentials in. I think that's part of the challenge, that we can make recommendations about what they should be looking for, asking for. But the reality is many of them have, credential issuing platforms that they are signed onto that don't issue as VCs. And so that gets a little messy, but yes, we would always recommend that they issue them as verifiable credentials. So in that data structure so that they can be interoperable and individuals can actually store them in compatible wallets.
If I may, I also have a question, and this is with regards to matching the skills. So you, on one hand, you have the education providers and the job providers. How do you actually make it happen that the skill concepts are actually making their ways into the credentials?
Yeah, so that the work of the micro pathways that we build end up becoming more regionally focused efforts because we do the design sessions with the higher education groups or the training providers, and we do them with the employers. We have tools that are surfacing those skills and then making that visible on both sides, right? So when the employers go through the process and say, we have a tool called the T-Profile that helps to identify the top three so durable skills and then the top three technical or industry specific skills for that role as named by employers. We surface those and they share those across the design groups so that the employers are seeing what higher ed prioritizes in their programs and that employer or education providers see what the employers are identifying in their programs or what they need to be successful in those job roles. So that's part of that process. Then when it actually comes to the credentialing strategy and embedding that skills data inside of the credentials, that's where the conversation moves with the education providers to say, you know, how are you going to do this? What platform are you going to use? What tools are you going to use to actually make that happen? And I think I saw Deb's name on here, Deb Everhart from Credential Engine. Credential Engine's an important partner in that process for storing skills data and using structured language to make sure that that's represented inside the credentials as well.
Thank you.
Yeah, of course. So I'm going to fly through Experience U a little bit because this tool or this initiative is doing some of the LER work at scale with some of the partners that are doing things sort of at the systems level, right? So the examples I just shared with education providers, with employers, and some of the regional work we're doing there. This initiative is with the U.S. Chamber of Commerce Foundation. It's still focused on LERs, but it's using AI to take existing skills data, whatever that may be, from individuals and translating that into credentials that would then be issued to those individuals. So you can imagine, as I go through here, I'll just share some of the partners, some of the work and the projects that they created. So we're really built on this premise that, LERs are inaccessible for most people. So this project really wanted to see how we might use AI to help make LERs at scale for people navigating their career and economic opportunity. So this started last year, was phase one. These are all the groups that were participating in this initiative. This was not something that was funding each of these teams and their work. It was more about finding people who are doing this kind of work or want to engage in this kind of work and want to dedicate time and effort to sort of a project sprint to show a proof of concept around technical standards. So this one was about building LERs with technical standards underneath them. This was a very simple graphic for how we went about that. But these were the milestones, the technical milestones that we were asking project teams to build around. And you can see the structured JSON-LD formats of OBB3, CLRV2, and the Verified Credential Data Model 1.1. That was the base. So when groups were coming to this work saying, how do we structure it? These are the formats you should be working in and then issuing to individuals so that their LER can be both human readable and machine readable. the application of AI in this work ended up kind of falling into sort of three buckets, credential mapping, skill and competency extraction, and then AI agents as assistants. So one of the projects was working with incarcerated people inside of prisons in the States, and they had built a very simple chat agent where because inmates aren't able to type into keyboards, they had to use a voice-based chat agent to have an individual talk about some of the experiences they had inside of prisons. Like if they were working in a kitchen or they were cleaning for years, they would share those experiences. The chat agent would kind of respond to them and say, hey, it sounds like you did these things and you learned these skills. Is that true or not? And as they were validating those experiences through this chat interface, they would then create credentials on the back end that embedded that skills data inside of them so that when they were released from prison, they could have a digital wallet with credentials to go then take to find opportunity. So that's an example of an agent assistant that was used in this project. All this work was really built around these different personas. So that this again goes back to the human-centered nature of Education Design Lab's work, is we're really rallying around the individuals that are going through this process. And in this phase, at least for this work, groups were talking with and working with individuals and validating their tools with individuals that were getting LERs created for them. So they were very much a human, humans in the design process and working with these teams to create and validate the tools. So here's some of the key takeaways. I want to focus on the interoperability of all this work. It is possible. And I think that was, the question that Sharon was asking too is, you know, if you do all this work and it's not in, an interoperable data format, then does it really help them navigate a skills ecosystem or a larger, digital, world? And, you know, our response to that would be no, it doesn't. If you're issuing credentials, but they don't have any portability to them, you can't store them in a wallet. You can't do anything with them outside of that narrow platform or environment, then it really doesn't help them find new opportunity. It really doesn't help them even just understand the skills that they have maybe. So this deck will get shared. These are some of the learnings. But we got into phase two now, and that's where I think Simone kind of nudged me to share with this group, is that we're expanding on what we learned in phase one and the proof of concepts there to start doing a longer timeline around field testing. So we know that these tools exist. We know that groups are doing this work, and we're trying to align with projects that are using AI or translating and or translating past experiences into credential formats to take with them. And again, this is all being done as a project with the U.S. Chamber of Commerce Foundation under the T3 Innovation Network. So that's a network that the chamber oversees. As this initiative specifically is funded by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, but it sits under the T3 Innovation Network. And I know Dimitri and others are involved in some of those other working groups and other projects with the T3 Network as well. With at the foundation of all of this would be technical standards and in some cases building standards to help advance all this work. So this is the guiding question that we're using for phase two, is really we are looking to get these into the hands of individuals at scale so that they can navigate and help to build this broader ecosystem. I think the scale part is really the focus of phase two, is that we've seen some groups doing this work, and now we'd really like to highlight the scaling of their efforts. And we kicked off a couple months ago, and this will be running sort of in two parts. One through the end of this year, and then the second being at the beginning of next year. And we have some guidelines that we've created for this work, and I'll share that after. I'm not going to go too far into that now, but if anyone has any questions about any of these, I'll make sure that my email address gets in the chat, and I would love to chat more about any of this. Taylor Hansen is the partner at the U.S. Chamber Foundation who is helping to lead this work, so he and I work closely on this, and many on the call I think are aware of or have been involved with some groups that participated in phase one and are participating in phase two. So here's the timeline of that work as well. As I mentioned, we aren't funding project teams. It's really a community of practice that's being developed here because we are all kind of navigating this world together. We see that as being a really powerful part of this effort. And we've heard that from participants as well, is that really being able to connect with others who are doing this work and talk about some of the challenges and successes they're having is really powerful. Phil Long is the lead technical advisor on this project and was through phase one as well. And through this effort, there is a real powerful opportunity to have this sort of discourse out in the open and have a platform to elevate these conversations with others. Oh, let's see. Phil is on here. Hey, Phil. So he can answer any questions about some of the technical stuff and just this project at large. The other platform that we're using is the T3 meeting schedule to have some of these conversations. So the TLN was Trusted Learner Network Unconference was just in Phoenix about a month ago, and there was a T3 day where they updated on the T3 projects, and we talked about Experience U, and there was the announcement of the T3 International, which includes Simone as sort of the representative of some of that work. So a lot of great things happening in the T3 network in the States, and really excited that this project gets to be one of them. So I'll pause there and see what other questions we have, and then I'll turn it over to Danielle. She's going to talk more about a tool that she's been the lead on that helps our partners navigate this whole kind of wicked world of credentialing and wallets and LERs. But yeah, any questions or comments people want to share?
I don't see a queue in the chat, but we missed a question or comment from Phil. So Phil, if you want to come on.
On that, yes, can you hear me? This is good. The question actually back then was with respect to how is the conversation about skills progressing to be able to identify them both from the perspective of identify skills associated with a training and education that might be coming from formal entities like community colleges and training companies and things, as well as internally professional development training that are going on within businesses, and mapping those to their expression in skills-based credentials. And the comment there was really more than a question, that we've finally been able to get engaged with the U.S. Chamber of Commerce's talent pipeline program, which brings in individuals in mostly medium-sized businesses into an academy kind of context to give them professional development around better practices for running their businesses. And one of the places that we're now being able to introduce that conversation about skills development and how it's recognized. So that was a positive advancement, if you will, of industries getting connected to this conversation, where it's already talked about a lot, but doesn't necessarily get rendered well in terms of their effective utilization of it. And of course, Danielle can talk more about the skills-based hiring and advancement work that she was leading at T3 that led to a number of reports that hopefully she could put in chat or something to give you some links to. So that was what that is. With respect to the AI project work on Experience U, the interesting thing that we found that was jumped past to some extent in terms of learnings was that the use of the AI and the like and the ability to integrate it into systems that generated or extracted out skills and the like was relatively straightforward relative to the unfamiliarity that most of the developers and technical people in the companies had with the JSON-LD expression of this as a graph. And as a consequence, there was more discussion around how to go about translating that information properly into a JSON-LD formatted credential that was computational. And I'd make one other comment, which is one project did extract skills from courses in Case Western Reserve's programs at university in the U.S. Their mechanism for deriving skills achieved because they only had inferential methods to do it, was to look at the recurrence of the statement of skills that were in syllabi about what was supposed to be learned, and when they occurred more than three to five times over the course of several semesters, then they inferred that there's a reasonable likelihood that that skill might have been in fact learned, and use that as their criteria for being able to pull it into a credential, which I thought was an interesting workaround to that problem. That's it. Thanks.
Thank you. Anybody else in the queue?
Don't see anyone.
There was one question from Eric Shepherd, but I think Danielle may have replied to that in the chat.
Great. And I'll be able to respond in the chat now too. I'm going to stop my screen share and pass it over to Danielle Saunders to talk about she's involved in so many things. So I feel like limiting her to just say she's going to talk about this thing, is not fair, but she's been really helping us with creating a credential wallet comparison tool. And Phil mentioned some of the skills-based hiring stuff that she's been involved in with the T3 network as well. But she's been an awesome partner. So I'll stop screen share and hand it over to Danielle.
Thanks, Colin. And I wanted to make sure we caught Eric's question. I don't know if I saw the answer. Just wanted to make sure we raised it, which was about, Colin, if you are aware of anyone using technology to let people upload paper qualifications to be recognized as an LER.
Yeah, so the example project that Phil shared was actually born from transcripts. So I guess in that term, if you use your PDF transcript for that specific use case, that's what it was mapping. So it was parsing out the information from the PDF and then mapping it to sort of those inferred skills from a language model that they had actually built on the Open Syllabus project, or built from the Open Syllabus project. So they worked with a couple other universities to build that language model and then map against. But the starting point was a PDF transcript. And some of the other projects, I think, you know, these groups talk about uploading PDFs in and then parsing them for key terms and then potentially attaching skills data for those skill terms. There was a project or two that was doing something akin to that.
It's so interesting. I'm glad you've been talking about that today, Colin. There's so many different directions to take. And there's so much work that was done in such a short amount of time. So I'm really glad, that you're able to share more on that today. So thanks for the intro, the warm intro, Colin. I'm a consultant in skills-based workforce development, work with, Colin and Naomi on what I'm going to share with you today at the lab, and also the chamber, working with Phil Long, Phil Barker, Eric Shepherd, Dimitri, who are all here today. Hello. And I wanted to give you an overview on this wallet comparison tool, which we've been creating for higher ed partners we're working with at the lab to help them answer questions around what is available in the market for purchase to help us communicate what our learners can do. And so it's a multi-part solution infrastructure that is needed, which includes issuing platforms, wallets, of course, registries, which Colin mentioned. So it's a complex thing to explain to folks. But lately we've been finding that, getting down to the actual products that are available themselves helps make this more concrete conversation. And so, we have a set of, wallets that we've looked at and kind of cross-checked across a set of principles that are intended to support skills-based hiring interoperability, usability, and accessibility so that people can get an idea of a little bit where the market is. So I'm going to share that in the chat. And while I do that, Colin, do you want me to go to the hour or break before the hour for any more business in this meeting?
You can take it all the way up to the hour, I think, with Q&A too, as long as, does that sound good, Itiko?
Yes, sure.
And Dimitri, are you in the queue?
I think he is. Dimitri? He was in the queue.
No worries, I'm just
sharing. Apologies. Was trying to find the mute button. Sorry about that. Yeah, so I had a quick question about one of the early slides, Colin, where you showed you mapped a number of fundamental skills or something like that. And I was wondering, is that available on the net? It's definitely something we'd love to take a look at. Always looking for skill schemas and credential schemas.
Yeah, I'll share the whole deck here. And if there are specific slides or docs that you want a closer look at, I could probably share those with you directly. I'm not sure that all of this is available on our website, but there are some samples there, and I'd be happy to share more.
Awesome. Thank you.
So I see people jumping in the doc. Thank you. This is a live document. We are continually adding updates as things change with these products. Everything is going pretty fast. So again, as an overview, we wanted to support skills-based hiring and the mobility of records. So we were inspired by JFF and Sharon Liu's wallet market scan that came out in 2022. And we are kind of fully supporting the use of the verifiable credential standard. So this is part of what we consider essential interoperability for wallets to support. And we, I'll kind of skip down real quick to these principles. We looked at a few categories of things that a wallet probably should do, with a baseline description of a wallet as something that allows you to store, curate, and share your records from it. And I want to spend a bit of time with you all on that. I'd actually love to have a discussion about clarifying exactly how we define a wallet at a couple of levels. But in this first pass, what we came up with are a set, this was all inspired by, the DCC's work, in their, creation of a list of requirements, for wallets and other sources we also drew on, to help, start to create this kind of lightweight pass here, in which we're looking at, some basic adherence to, guidelines for accessibility, but also, not, you know, having too much jargon, looking at, extra things that will help support equity. And then that just overall usability, kind of using the principle here of if one critical, step is broken that a user needs to complete, then it's really not usable. So any major breakage or anything that's just too difficult, is not very much a usable product for the broad audience that we are looking at, should be, able to use wallets. And then skills-based hiring and advancement, this gets into a lot of the fun, intriguing questions unfolding in how we capture and display skills data. But at a minimum, we want this to be able to, show what skills data is, contained in records. Kind of unpack that a little bit, facilitate it in some way. If it does more, that's even better. And we also expect that someone should be able to receive credentials and then curate a set of them, a bundle or whatever we want to call it, a verifiable presentation, and be able to share that. And I understand those are different things, but they're different options. Be able to share that out to a recipient like an employer. Interoperability, we wanted to make sure that the wallet allows the credentials to, most importantly, be imported and exported out in kind of a native format encoding so that there's no loss of data as it comes in and leaves. So ideally, it would be supporting anything that's a verifiable credential, open badge version 3, CLRV2. You know, this is what we'd really like to see. And then, of course, these great privacy and control features for the user, which put the user really in charge of receiving and sharing their records. Of course, self-assertions are an important part of this work, to be able to include things that may not have been received by the learner as a credential, but which are important for them to communicate and include in a bundle. And then, of course, verification should be supported, which should also include subject verification. So this would help you receive, if, you know, if you're receiving a credential, then it should be checked to see if that credential belongs to you. And so there's additional features here which just make things even more exciting and add functionality for the learner to be able to use their records in new ways, use them in a talent marketplace. There's more here. And hopefully as time goes on, things in the bonus section will come up into these other sections as things that we expect. And so I'll scroll up here. And you'll see we've got a set of vendors at the top here, their product name in teal along this line, just an overall statement about the wallet and how it kind of aligns or does not align to the principles here, basically how the business model operates, who is being charged, whether it's in production or in development or in pilot, and then a rough assessment of how it meets these criteria. Under the interoperability one, we look at which standards and protocols it's using or says it's using, any bonus features, and whether we were able to look at the wallet itself and play around with it. And it scrolls to the left, so you can scroll, or sorry, to the right and see more wallets. And I'll note that not every wallet that you may expect to be on here is on here yet. And that gets into the discussion that I'm hoping to have with you all in the next 10 or so minutes, which is the way we're defining wallet. And again, that minimum definition was around it being able to store, share, you kind of store, curate, and share records. But when you really get into the specifics, I think there are some cutoff points. Like, ideally, it can do all those record types, perhaps more. But what should it do at minimum right now to be called a wallet? And then what would indicate that it's not a wallet, that it's significantly below the kind of functionality that we would expect from a wallet to be considered not a wallet? Because there's such a spectrum of what is implemented and ready to go now. And there's less progress in full implementation of wallet features than would make it easy to say, okay, these are wallets, these are on, these are not wallets, these are not on. It's really quite complicated. So I think this group is fantastic for being able to discuss this. So that's the question I'd love to pose to you all.
Okay. I think, Dimitri, you were the first in the queue. I joined after you. Do you have a question?
No, I think I asked my question before, so go ahead.
Okay. So, well, I'm really impressed with all these, the solution comparisons as well as the wallet design principles. I have a philosophical question and a more pragmatic one. about these design principles, one of which that we get to discuss a lot here in Europe is about this partial sharing. And if that is something that you also contemplated, what it means or what it can imply in terms of like censoring out the bad parts from credentials to gain advantage or not? Or is it something that you just think that people should just share responsibly? And my other question or observation is with regards to the interoperability, where you say holder can receive and decline digital credentials, but I believe that there are some credential issuers who have an obligation to issue credentials, like higher education degrees, for example, that should not be allowed to be declined by the holders. Does that impact this list in any sense, or is it something that you already thought about and you still came up with this interoperability design principle?
Thanks for your questions. I'll do them in order. So yeah, as Dimitri just said, partial sharing, that makes me think of selective and progressive disclosure. Does that sound right to you, where someone is able to either share only a partial part of their record with a relying party, or share it some first, and then as a later stage happens, more of the record or all of the record later?
I think that's a question for you.
Yeah, that's a question for you. Does that sound like what you're asking about?
Sorry. Yeah. Yeah. For me, I thought it's if you have a comprehensive credential and which has lots of subjects, for example, and you failed one and excelled at the others, could you remove the one from what you're sharing that you failed, so you project a better image of your academic records, for example?
Yes. So short answer, yes, absolutely. That would be fantastic. We want to see Wallet to be able to support that. That would be sharing in part, or potentially as a derivation also gets into where you might be able to share a computation from your records, but not the actual data itself. For example, age as the computed, like a binary on, did you have the right age for something? So yes, I think that would be ideal. Not necessarily a ton of implementation available yet. We'd love to see more. So the second point too, on holder can decline, that was a really interesting one. And I think, again, it's all a great discussion, but if anyone has really strong opinions about that, it'd be great to hear more from you. It seemed like a good feature, but again, you know, if you decline to accept it in the wallet, then it may expire. Let me not use that word. The issuer may no longer be offering it at a certain time, so you may not have access to it, right? There's lots of interesting implications. You don't have to share it, even if you do accept it. Love to have a longer conversation on that with anyone who's interested.
I jumped in the queue. I don't know if anybody else is on there.
I think I see Susan might be one spot before you.
Fair enough.
Thank you. I'm Susan Straff. I'm Life Equipped, and I have two quick questions, hopefully. One is maybe a comment around Linux Open Wallet Foundation and the work that they're doing to create a wallet registry. There's a lot of overlap in terms of some of the things that they're looking for. There's some things you guys are looking for that they're not, and there might be a deeper level of review that they're planning to approach. So it might be interesting to, you know, understand what synergies may exist there. And one of the things that, you know, is confusing to me is like how you get onto this form, what the eligibility intake, you know, onboarding looks like for the wallets that may want to get onto your list here as compared to, you know, the process with, let's say, Open Wallet Foundation, which is open for anyone to have their wallet assessed. So just wanted to understand that process a little bit more and how that collaboration may be coming along.
I think that'd be a great conversation. Love it if you could point me to who we could talk to on that, if that's you or someone else. Love to talk about any collaboration or work that we could share. In terms of the process for getting onto this list, it's really just reaching out to us. And there's a form you can submit. And we just work one-on-one with the vendors and have an ongoing conversation. It's very much a back and forth where we want to make it as collaborative as possible with everyone.
And I'll add too that I sort of have an eye on at least subscribe to the Open Law Foundation's listserv essentially, and the context for the one that Danielle and I are talking about here is for U.S.-based higher education providers specifically. So I think that's the context at least from which this one should be viewed, is that the realities around their learning management systems, their student information systems, and things that are already happening on campus sort of drive their ability to even think about approaching a wallet. Many of them feel a responsibility to make a wallet recommendation or provide a wallet for their students, as opposed to the idea that their students would have their own wallet that they're then bringing to the university or education provider. So I think that context might be helpful, at least in determining how this tool supports specific partners versus, like how you mentioned, the Open Wallet Foundation, I think has more of a global perspective and really like a universal adoption and universal implementation to it. But like Danielle said, anyone can reach out to us and we'd be happy to have the conversation and add them to the list as appropriate. And there should be in that doc a link. Yeah, I think Danielle highlighted it right there to complete the form and get that process going with us.
Thank you. We have one more minute, and I think one person in the queue. So final words for Phil?
Yeah, just a quick comment. The notion of receiving the ability of an individual to decline, for example, a transcript or something or a degree assertion from their institution, at least in the U.S., the student or the learner does not have to accept that. That doesn't mean that the institution hasn't done the work necessary and evaluated that person's contributions in their courses and the like to make their award. But the student, now graduate, does not have to accept that if they don't want to. And that leads to the second comment with respect to selective disclosure. It's very new to most of the folks out there, I think. And we've had conversations with ACRA, which is the Registrar and Admissions Officers Associations in the U.S., about signing individual classes that are in, or courses that are in, a transcript, as opposed to signing the overall transcript document, such that an individual might therefore be able to selectively pull out verifiable course information from a transcript and use that in a verifiable presentation sent to an employer, but with the context that we would like to ensure that the individuals receiving it know this is a partial representation of that individual's overall transcript. I'll stop there. Thank you.
Good context, Bill.
Great solution to the Gordian knot. Well, we reached the end of the session limit, but if you want to have some closing words, Colin and Daniel, the final words are yours before we close. And thank you very much for your contribution. It's very exciting.
Yeah, I just want to echo the thanks to everyone here. I mean, I feel like we are even able to have this conversation because of all of the years of work that this group has done and all the reports and projects that have been put out there. We really want this to be additive, and we're really trying to support education and employer partners that are hearing about LERs, hearing about wallets, trying to make decisions about systems and tools to implement. So appreciate the time to present some of our work. Happy to talk about it more with anyone here, but just want to say thank you to everyone here for helping advance this work and bring these conversations together.
That's a fabulous call out, Colin. And I know we would love to continue this conversation. So please do reach out. I'll put my email in the chat here.
No, it was added to the P2. Yeah.
That was an attempt to do a clap thank you, and it clicked in the wrong spot.
We'll take it. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Bye. Cheers. See you next week.